Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we'll meet one of Mayor de Blasio's most interesting appointees, Steve Banks, famous for suing the city on behalf of the poor as head of the Legal Aid Society. Now he is running HRA, the agency that serves the poor. Steve Banks, congratulations on this job, and welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate that introduction.
And to look back before we look forward, so people have a sense of your background, I think your most famous lawsuit had to do with the right of homeless people to obtain shelter. How would you describe what you accomplished with that?
Well, at the time, in the early 80s, it was a difficult period in the city's evolution, and people were turning to the government for help, and the government was turning their backs, turning its back on people who really desperately needed a roof over their heads and assistance. And we ended up going to court, and ultimately there is now a requirement that the city of New York provide shelter to children and adults who have no other place to turn.
And you say the 1980s. That actually didn't get settled until 2008. Am I right?
It took 25 years until finally the city agreed to a permanent right to shelter and to resolve the litigation.
And if that's the most famous, what would you say is another accomplishment of yours from suing the last five mayors, which you did, that the press didn't write about as much?
Well, actually, the thing I'm probably proudest the most is working at the Legal Aid Society with my colleagues and staving off a near bankruptcy in 2004, working with the board of directors and the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys and 1199 SEIU and managers to take legal aid back from the abyss in 2004. And it was really only almost going to be a New York City without a Legal Aid Society because we almost went bankrupt. And so managing through a situation in which a $225 million organization, 1,900 employees almost ceased to exist was, I think, a tremendous accomplishment for our collective efforts, but also gave me a great understanding of how to actually manage a large agency.
And so relevant to what you're about to do, but relevant to legal aid and the stress on the resources for lawyers that represent the poor for not much money. We did a segment recently on city council's push to get guaranteed legal representation for tenants in housing court. And one of the questions about that is it's already so hard for legal aid and others doing pro bono work just to cover all the defendants in criminal cases. Would it stress the system too much to have that guarantee in housing court? Do you have an opinion about that?
Well, it's certainly something over the years that I work with Chief Judge Jonathan Lipman and his task force to expand access to legal services that we looked at a number of ways in which you could fill what is a very substantial access to justice gap, not only in New York City but across the state. And so some of the things we looked at are being put in place right now. For example, in the Brooklyn Housing Court, there's the Navigator Program in which community-based advocates are working with tenants. And then there are the additional resources that the Office of Court Administration has secured in the most recent state budget that are available to help lawyers on the front line. And then there are a number of innovative programs that the city itself has in place to try to address exactly the problem that you're talking about.
So it doesn't necessarily need a mandate in law? You're going to stay out of that one?
I think on my second week in the job that I'm going to just focus on what I'm doing now, which is learning how to evaluate the different problems that we've got in the agency.
So how do you see your new job, and how do you see your agency? The Human Resources Administration is such a sprawling bureaucracy.
Well, it's 15,000 staff nearly. It's $9 billion. It affects every aspect of low-income people's lives in New York City. It's one of the reasons why I was very grateful that the mayor chose me to play this role after 33 years as a legal aid lawyer. It's sort of the perfect culmination of a career focused on helping people to work for an agency that does help people. You know, I spent my first day about 10 days ago traveling around all five boroughs meeting with frontline staff. And the thing that's impressed me in the frontline staff that I've spoken to is that they have great ideas about how to make the kind of changes that they think and that I think and that others think are important and certainly the mayor thinks are important in terms of addressing New Yorkers who are in desperate need to turn to us for help. And you name the kind of problem. It's a problem that the agency is responsible for: domestic violence, people living with HIV, AIDS, food, cash assistance, preventing homelessness, medical assistance. It's a full range of problems, and the agency has the ability to comprehensively address those kinds of problems.
And the mayor's press release on your appointment said you would replace punitive policies with ones to help struggling New Yorkers. Can you give me a couple of examples of those punitive policies from the past and how you've begun to address them or plan to?
Well, I can tell you about a few we've already begun to address just in the last 10 days. The prior administration had a policy of seeking to collect funds from the sponsors of immigrants if the immigrants eventually needed to get help from the government. And that was a platform, a position of Mayor de Blasio, that policy should be undone. The policy has been undone. The funds are being restored. So that punitive policy has been addressed. On my very first day, I met with frontline staff, and we talked about a city policy that said all homeless people should go to only one center in a Northern Boulevard in Queens, even if they lived in a shelter in the Bronx or they lived in a facility in Brooklyn or Staten Island. And so we're working with the staff to take a much more appropriate response to the needs of homeless people and have them be able to get help in their home borough. My first day, I met with staff at a center where the prior administration essentially sent people there in a punitive way and were not permitting them even to be engaged in any work programs if they had missed an appointment. And that was generating substantial numbers of state fair hearings. And the state budget now says New York City is going to pay a $10 million penalty if we don't get control over these unnecessary hearings that were generated by this very punitive policy of the prior administration. So in working with the frontline staff and managers and the staff unions representing the staff, we're working out a new program that's going to engage people much earlier in terms of their training needs, their work needs, and other things like that, instead of sending them someplace where they're just going to be essentially be put on a churning mill, which is resulting in unnecessary hearings and substantial penalties potentially for New York City.
That's a lot right out of the gate. And one of the perennial complaints of food stamp recipients, and I guess others on other benefits, is that the bureaucracy is set up with all these obstacles to discourage people from actually getting benefits. It takes so much time standing in line originally and to recertify your benefits, and it's done mostly during the weekday, and paperwork requirements are sometimes confusing, and there aren't many locations in each borough. You know, does everybody in Queens really have to go to Sutphin Boulevard? Do you think there's anything in the current city rules designed to discourage people from getting food stamps to which they're entitled, and do you have your sights set on dismantling any of those?
Well, there are certainly a whole range of procedures, and you summarized a number of them very well, that are causing two problems for our agency. One is a number of unnecessary appointments, unnecessary procedures are causing a workload problem for frontline staff, and they also create the potential for harm to clients. You know, one missed notice that gets lost in the mail or one missed appointment because a child is sick is going to cause a case closing, which is going to cause more work for the worker, which is going to cause an unnecessary hearing, which is now something that we're subject to a potential $10 million penalty. So together with the senior managers, and I've been very encouraged by the interest and desire of senior managers to take another look at all these kinds of procedures, and the frontline staff who have great ideas, we're evaluating literally every process to say, does it add an unnecessary burden to the workload of the workers? Is it something that's necessary in terms of providing the help that we need and ensuring the integrity of our programs? And is it potentially going to lead to unnecessary state hearings, which will then result in a penalty to us? So we're looking literally at every procedure.
Do you plan to reduce the city's requirement that many younger and able-bodied food stamp recipients work for their benefits? I think you've been critical of that in the past.
Well, the mayor's been critical of that in the past, and it's certainly something that as we develop our budget, we're looking at that policy. There is a financial consequence for the city about implementing that policy, but it's something that it was part of the mayor's platform. It's something that I know staff at HRA feel strongly about. I feel strongly about it. And it's part of bridging the gap between people who have enough to eat and people who don't have enough to eat. So it's something that's very high on our priority list.
Why do you feel strongly about that? Do you oppose on philosophical grounds work fair or having to work for benefits that the taxpayers are paying for if you're otherwise unemployed?
Well, it's not so much what I think or what I don't think. There are rules. There are federal rules. There are state rules. And they relate to what the work requirements are and are not. And where there are requirements to have programs in place, we're certainly going to have to continue them. But what's most important is to reevaluate and see how effective they are. So are we providing proper training for people? We had the opportunity right as I was coming in to reevaluate the city's position on college. And the prior two administrations had said that only 2 years of college was all you should be able to get, notwithstanding study after study that showed that four-year college was going to result in a greater likelihood of getting out of poverty and getting jobs that actually pay a living wage. And so I was very happy that the city and HRA, we were able to change our position, support four-year college. And as a result of the efforts in Albany and HRA's position, the position of the advocacy community, particularly CUNY students and CUNY groups, it's now in state law that you are permitted to go to four-year college as part of your training program. So it's that kind of smart policy reevaluation that we need to do to make sure that our programs that are leading to work are effective in terms of what they're leading towards.
That drives conservative nuts. I think that particular one, they want workfare to be about work. They don't want, when there's already a shortage of tuition assistance, people who are on the public dole, as they see it, to get a leg up in going to college.
Well, I think it was a fully considered change that the Senate and the Assembly and the governor all supported in Albany. And I think with that bipartisan approach in our state, HRA was very proud to be part of the effort with the city and the mayor and the governor and the Assembly and the Senate to say, look, New York is really about getting people up and out of poverty. And this was an important step towards doing that. This is an agency that I'm very honored to be able to run, whose mission is fighting poverty and income inequality in the city.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with the new commissioner of the city's Human Resources Administration, the sprawling bureaucracy that does all kinds of things on behalf of sick and needy people. Steve Banks, who built his reputation as the head of legal aid, suing five past administrations for being inadequate, as he saw it in these respects, now appointed by Progressive Mayor de Blasio to head the agency. Let's take a couple of calls. People are calling in, even though I didn't give out the phone number, which, by the way, is 212-433-WNYC. And Janet in the East Village, you're on WNYC with Steve Banks. Hello.
Oh. Hi, Commissioner. I have a question. It's something that's been I've been concerned about for many years now. I remember there was a Supreme Court decision way back. I think it was Giuliani was mayor. We're talking about the 1990s. There was a Supreme Court order that ordered the city to raise welfare benefits to a level where they would be commensurate with the actual cost of housing in New York. And as far as I know, that has never happened. Did that ever happen? I mean, wouldn't we have less homelessness if welfare payments actually kept pace with the cost of housing?
It was actually an order that ran to the state of the state social services agency, and it was obtained in a lawsuit that the Legal Aid Society brought against the state Department of Social Services, and it required the state to recalculate the shelter allowance, which the state did. And then the state also put in place a program called FEPS, the Family Eviction Prevention Subsidy Program. Both efforts on the state level aimed at addressing this. But you're absolutely right. These are exactly the kinds of things that we should be reevaluating to see where we are now, years later, in terms of the ability to effectively prevent homelessness in the city, of which HRA is on the front lines in its responsibility to be working in partnership with the Department of Homeless Services to be preventing homelessness.
Amy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I have a friend who his health is really bad. He's been in and out of hospitals, and you know he's needed a lot of assistance and actually had to. Well, you know, he's in danger of losing his housing. And he's been, last time I talked to him about it, it happened twice that he had been told he absolutely had to get to appear in court in Brooklyn, and he lives in Manhattan. It's very difficult for him to be able just to physically get there.
And so what's your question for the commissioner? Well, is there something that the agency is doing that makes it harder?
Both times the judge, when he got there, the judge said that there was no need for him to have appeared in court. you know, didn't have to go through all this. And I don't know if it's a question of coordination between different bureaucracies or
I see. But HRA had told him that HRA had told him that he had to appear in person?
Yeah. I don't know who told him.
Well, in my prior life, I know that these issues certainly rise in terms of people appearing in court under very difficult circumstances. One of the things we're going to be looking at HRA is what we can do to enhance our efforts to prevent homelessness, and hopefully that would be able to give someone like the individual you're describing greater access to a helping hand rather than sometimes what people feel, which is that they end up not knowing where to turn for help. And we want to be sure that our agency is one of the places people can turn to get help and actually get it.
Heather in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Heather.
Oh, my gosh. Hi. Pardon me if it's loud. I'm kind of hitting the streets. I work for a case management agency who help homebound elderly in certain areas of Manhattan. So what we do is we assist people who can't get to the food stamps office with their applications. We help with other things as well. So you were speaking about the food stamps challenges. We call them challenges a few minutes ago. But I just wanted to add, nobody answers the phone in the food stamps office. We try and get an update, where the cases are, you know, where they are in their processing. It's incredibly difficult to get food stamps for people who maybe can ambulate, but people who are not able to leave their homes and maybe can't press the buttons on their phone to wait on the line. It's probably our biggest challenge.
Is getting food stamps for the homebound elderly, is that the population you're talking about?
It is strictly homebound elderly, and, you know, there's a telephone interview option for people who can't go to the food stamps office to get the face-to-face.
But?
So their telephone interview appointments, the letter comes to tell the clients when their appointment is, sometimes on the day of the appointment, or the letters arrive at the client's home after the said telephone interview was supposed to take place.
Right. You know, that's a good thing for you to look into with the staff, because I'll tell you that I've heard that exact same story from a food stamp worker.
Right. I think that what I'm hearing, too, from the managers and the frontline staff, that this is a problem, and it's something that we're evaluating the way in which your appointments are set. And so if it's set, you know, everyone has an appointment between a particular series of hours versus it's set for a specific time, it causes a great deal of workload problem for the worker, and it causes a great deal of problem for the applicant or recipient to actually get access. So we're reevaluating the entire way in which these kinds of interviews are done. And that's something that it's helpful that's coming from someone from the outside, but I want to emphasize what's been a tremendously gratifying experience the last couple of days, the week to 10 days, and meeting with staff on the front lines is the staff themselves and the managers are identifying these very same problems and helping coming forward with solutions. And I think there's a great wealth of energy at the agency right now to try to make the changes that are needed.
So that timing of the arrival of the letters, not just a day before or on the day of the homebound person's telephone interview, that's the problem that I've heard about before that she brought up. So I hope you look into that one.
We are already looking into that one. But I want to emphasize, however, you can't undo 20 years versus of difficult policies
in 20
right
minutes.
Away. But you can, but on the other hand, that's not a complete answer. We have to be spending every day, every hour, really trying to see what kind of changes we can make.
Let me throw one piece of counterpoint at you from the New York Post. When you got appointed, they had an editorial with a headline to the effect of, "There goes welfare reform." And they took aim at your famous right to homeless shelter case and said the steady stream of single mothers claiming their homeless family shelter rights under your famous lawsuit settlement reflects not the failure of past government policies, but family breakdown. It said the number of married, drug-free parents seeking shelter is near zero, and you should be looking at family breakdown as a root cause in addition to what the government provides the people who are genuinely needy. Are they wrong?
Well, I think that a lot of the analysis that's being done about what our agency does or doesn't do reflects a caseload that really isn't the caseload that's currently the caseload of HRA. The caseload of HRA currently is a large number of people who have very serious medical and health problems, and a large number of people who are actually working or passing in and out of the labor market. I think there's a lot of mythology about who gets help from the agency, and it's important that the policies we have today reflect who's actually the people who are seeking our help. So to the extent that our caseload reflects what's going on in the larger economy, we're seeing a lot of working people who are put out of work as a result of economic circumstances. Their unemployment benefits expired because of the wisdom of Washington to not extend unemployment benefits, and they're coming to us for help. So the mythology of who our agency is helping has led to some of the bad policymaking that we've seen, and so we have to actually have policies that aim for who we're serving. Woman comes in who just lost her job, who lost her job within the last year, lost her unemployment benefits. She doesn't need resume writing. She needs to be rapidly attached back to the workforce.
We may have a whistleblower calling in. Let's see. Julia, who says she works at HRA. Julia, I have that right?
Yes, correct.
Hi.
Yes, hi. I would like to bring up a different point. Currently, Steve Banks was appointed as a commissioner of HRA, and we don't know what his policies are, but the only thing that I do know is that I used to work for New York City Housing, and a lot of people have used the system. They apply for a lot of one-shot deals, and people that actually need help and want help and deserve help sometimes cannot get it.
So do you see it going in both directions? Some of the obstacles we've been talking about to qualified people getting their benefits at the same time as people who are unqualified find it too easy to scam the system?
Correct.
What's an example of that? How are people scamming the system?
A lot of people actually say that they're homeless, but they're not. A lot of people actually don't pay rent just to get a one-shot deal and to send the landlord to court in order to evict them. Those are some of the examples of things that we've seen here at HRA.
Why would someone do that? Because I think the pushback from Mayor de Blasio might be people aren't making themselves homeless to go into the lousy shelter system.
There was a program, Section 8, that people took advantage of. And
the housing vouchers?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have to prove their income?
They did, and there's a lot of scamming going into that system.
Yes. Julia, thank you very much. Well, that's the other side. And honestly, my friends in the food stamps business tell me the same thing, that as much as the major problem is obstacles to qualified people, there is also scamming that goes on.
Well, I think it's also important to sort of deconstruct some of the comments here. I mean, I've spent years fighting the city about turning down people who are eligible for shelter who weren't getting shelter. And I think that the Department of Homeless Services has a very stringent eligibility process in place. Section 8 program is actually run by the New York City Housing Authority, but there are very few vouchers left anymore because the Congress has reduced the funding for the city. And one of the reasons why New York City and other cities across the country are having trouble fighting homelessness is because of those federal decisions. But having said all that, I take the caller's comment to heart from the following perspective. The agency has a part of its operations, which is basically program integrity. And I know there are a lot of people within the agency and outside of the agency that say, well, my first day of work, I'm going to eliminate that part of the agency. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's led by a great group of managers. It's very important to me that as we make positive changes to benefit clients, that we maintain that program integrity unit, which I think has tremendous contributions to make in terms of improving policies. My initial meetings with the managers of those groups, they've identified some of the very same policies that I've been concerned about by saying those policies are counterproductive and we're wasting resources chasing after the wrong kinds of things. And so to me, program integrity and the unit that people were afraid I might have a negative view towards, I think it's a critical program, and I'm certainly going to ensure that it's part of our moving forward to make sure that we actually give the help that we need to people who need it, and that people who don't need help are not the people that we're serving.
And it helps shore up confidence in
absolutely.
The very needed programs
absolutely.
That you administer. So we're just about out of time. To sum up, you used to sue HRA on behalf of New York's needy. Now you're the commissioner. Are you hiring any good defense attorneys?
Well, I think that one of the things about running an agency like HRA that's very important to do, which is to run it in the same way that if you were in the corporate world, you might run it, which is to say you have to be looking at risks, and risks of being sued are something that you look at in private industry. And so we, in running this agency, have to look at, are there things that we're doing that could be susceptible of lawsuits, and we should therefore not wait to be sued to make things to make the kinds of decisions that need to be made. We should do the right thing on our own. And if we end up being sued, our first response should be, is there something here that we should try to make a change to improve for our clients and to ensure that our programs are operating lawfully within the requirements of law?
You know, a lot of listeners who don't need HRA services have no idea how many people there are in New York City who are dependent on HRA for daily or weekly or monthly sustenance of one kind or another. So when your agency gets it right, it helps so many New York City residents.
I appreciate that.
Good luck.
There are 3 million people receiving Medicaid. There are 1.8 million people receiving the old food stamp benefits, and 350,000 people every month getting cash assistance. It's a limitless impact on people's lives every day, and our aim is to get it right so the people who need the help get the help they need.
The new commissioner of the Human Resources Administration, Steve Banks, appointed by Mayor de Blasio. Look forward to having you back on particular initiatives and issues as they come up. Thank you very much.
Happy to be here. Thank you.